So welcome to Financial Markets Insights. I'm your host, David Burney, and today I'm joined by not one, but two innovation leaders in the world of compliance and trade surveillance, Rob Cope and Melissa Watrous of Trillium Surveyor. Hi, guys.
Hi, thanks for having us.
Pleasure. So I encountered Trillium Surveyor at Trade Tech Equities in Paris earlier this year and found their software that encompasses both performance, execution and compliance really interesting. Despite knowing the sector well, I actually had never heard of them. So this should be an education, I suspect, to many people in the UK-EU time zone. To set the scene, Rob brings years of experience from trading desk and portfolio management world, while Melissa has the operations and trade surveillance angles covered. Trillium operates in an area of best execution analytics, right? Which in the US is the term for what we in the UK and the EU refer to as TCA. So transaction cost analysis, best execution analytics. When we use those terms, they're fairly interchangeable. We'll be exploring what could be improved in the legacy surveillance model, how 24/5 markets and crypto might reshape risk, and why the future of compliance might be less about checklists and more about alpha. So, having said all of that, let's go switch over to the people that are going to talk to us and educate us now. Rob, Melissa, good to have you on. Can you start off by telling us each a bit about your background? So, what led you to be in a company that shapes the crossroads of trading and compliance?
So, I have been in financial services my entire career. So, I cut my teeth in operations at Morgan Stanley and then ended up being a trade surveillance practitioner. So I was a compliance officer based out of the United Kingdom for several years, so covering all of EMEA, and then moving to a more strategic side for global monitoring. That 4 years ago, moved over to Trillium Surveyor, wanted to take the insights that I've learned as a practitioner institutionally and help build a product that can really service the financial industry, particularly compliance and trading teams. And that's exactly what we do. You know, we equip trading and compliance with powerful trade surveillance, as well as, David, as you mentioned, our next generation best execution tool.
And I've pretty much been in the financial industry since the late 90s, started off in the foreign exchange market, which was pretty much the wild, wild west, and then moved into equities trading and then fund management, prop trading and so on. My experience really is all on the other side of the market. And I joined Trillium Surveyor about 2 years ago because of that experience. I've seen the market evolve from what used to be manipulation or not manipulation to what is. I've in the past done some manipulation unintentionally and unintentionally. So, you know, I know how the market works and I was excited to see how I could help on this side of the field.
A little bit of catch me if you can. Yeah.
Grave admitting live on a podcast that we're guilty of marking information.
You know what? It is what it is. And back then it was, you know, spoofing was legal for much of the early 2000s until it wasn't. So it's just how the market's evolved. And that's what's really interesting. It's an ever-changing environment, which I find really cool.
It's actually also, it's part of our evolution story as well. So, I mean, the way that Surveyor came to be is that we were formed inside a trading desk. And so it was built for a proprietary need when, you know, a trading firm was fined. And so, you know, what was out there wasn't able to capture this type of complicated behavior. So Surveyor was built and spun out into its own company. And now we get to service the industry at large.
Cool. I mean, it's interesting because we're here to learn about Trillium Surveyor, but we're also talking about the sector as a whole. So many platforms claim to be trader-centric, but I think it's fair to say lots of them are built initially by techs and they're not that trader-centric. So how did your frustration shape what surveillance tools should look like? How did that come about?
So I think that historically, compliance has been a little bit of, it's an obligation, it's really, you know, it's to kind of service just its siloed function. And so, you know, the frustrations are almost culturally to start, you know, I think compliance really does serve an organization at large. And there's true, you know, alpha and market insight that can be gained from what's done in the compliance space. And so building a tool that helps empower compliance teams, firstly, and then also speaks the same language to traders so that that communication between people and also between systems is happening. And I think it just adds that much more value and that much ROI to a compliance solution.
I'd add to that from the, you could say, the trader's perspective. As this market evolved, you know, as a trader and you're active in the markets, you don't want to be constantly, and it was considered harassment from the compliance team asking, you know, why did you do this trade? Why did you do that trade? And so false positives were really a big issue. And it is a big issue for, you could say, for both sides of the trade. So certainly from a trader perspective, knowing that they are looking for you is very important, but also not constantly being asked about trades that really weren't, that they were false positives. And so that is, you could say, a very big, important thing for the trading side of things. So you're not, you know, wasting your time on something that is not generating money or alpha.
Right. And also being able to take part in opportunities, right? You know, David, you mentioned like 24/5, for example. You know, I think compliance folks, we want to empower the organization to be able to take advantage of these new opportunities that are out there. And so, you know, that partnership and building a tool that helps enter the marketplace safely, I think is that much more mission critical.
It's interesting. In another part of my life, I work with trading desks on the buy side. And truly, I think almost every trader I talk to is trying to do the best thing. Every time they get a trade, they're trying to do the best thing. We're seeing a real shift from a compliance box-ticking exercise to where asset managers and best execution committees are seeking to improve alpha, both in retention and buyer. In fact, we're starting to see a new term, not best execution, but best outcome, starting to be used here, which I think is a kind of a cool term because execution always assumes that you're going to get the very best price in the world, and we know technically that's difficult. What actually the shift that we talk about when we talk to managers is the improvement in alpha is almost like free money. It's like free cash inflow to the fund. And that's good news because actually that improves performance and that improves the end investor's outcome. But you can really convince the manager to do it when you explain to him, well, that also increases the management fee. The management fee gets better if the fund gets bigger. And if execution's better, this whole process becomes far more than just a compliance box-ticking exercise. And I really get that. I kind of think that's a cool thing. I mean, if this is true, and it is, why do you think so many firms still rely on legacy surveillance systems built for a different era?
Yeah, I can say from a former life as well, I think that there's like a certain inertia with trying to change from legacy platforms that still exist. And I think that there's this misconception out there that the shifting to a new field just feels so, it feels like such a heavy slog for organizations where, you know, David, as you mentioned before, like if there's real alpha opportunities, if there are solutions out there like Surveyor, for example, who can make your life easier, it becomes sort of a no-brainer. So, you know, I think that changing that mind shift to not only are you going to get true ROI and true insights out of a more modern tool, but equally, it's actually not as onerous of a change as I think people have historically thought it to be. So like, for example, on our side, we normalize data for a client. So, you know, it's really finding that partner out there, that technology partner who can build something that's going to be meaningful to your organization without having to spend a ton of resources. And then you save time in the end.
I would add, there is also, you see, the horizontal expansion. So, you know, why just have trade surveillance when you can have trade surveillance or market abuse, as they say in the UK and Europe, and best acts TCA? So having, you say, multiple different products or you're covering multiple different sides of compliance makes it a much more compelling argument to make the switch. And, you know, because trade surveillance is a very compliance-driven platform, but the amount of data that it consumes lends itself to being such a great best X complement. So having those two together just is, to us, is a really no-brainer, which is, you know, why we are launching our new Best Act product, because it's the Best Act platform that can really bring that alpha where you can look at your executions, look at your different venues, and really make constant changes and constant analysis to improve your executions, or as you say, prove your outcomes, and then get better alpha on that.
Yeah, I mean, as I said to you, Rob, when we met in Paris, I had just finished a very in-depth TCA, as we call it here, and market abuse piece of research, which is why I was surprised to find something I hadn't heard of almost 3 weeks after the fact that I'd just finished. And there is a massive desire for all of that to come from a single provider. For this client that we worked for, they really wanted to have one provider. And change management is tough. It's always tough. But actually, getting the data in the right process allows you to convince institutions to think or rethink. So I'm not here to abuse anyone who's been a historical provider of TCA in the UK and you're looking for a place, but what are the myths And I guess one of them is how difficult it is to change provider, or assumptions that people still have about what the difference between historic TCA providers and the new wave of people who are coming to this market. What do you think they kind of don't know they don't know yet?
Well, I mean, put it in context with like MIFID, for example. So I think that with like pre-MIFID, TCA and best execution, as you were saying before, David, was it was really just like, let's get the best price. And I think that that's what folks tend to maybe even still think that's what, you know, TCA solutions just look at. But I think committees and best execution committees are now asking more sophisticated questions. So they're asking, are we considering all the relevant, you know, factors, including like speed and likelihood? What's the market impact? How do we demonstrate that our execution venues are delivering optimal outcomes in various, you know, market conditions? And so there are solutions out there now that can answer these questions and answer them, you know, meaningfully and provide those, you know, quality metrics that are now really getting scrutinized, I think, by folks, and provide them more instantly. So you don't need to wait and use a tool, you know, again, with that legacy mindset of, okay, I'll get this information once a quarter, once a month. For example, with us, like our solution, you can get insights on a daily basis. And that really then just does help you define and optimize your strategies.
And also I might add too, is just you look at market abuse systems and best active originally, people are like, oh, we're just trying to really catch the bad apples, the bad trader, really a regulatory side of things. But you know what? As the data and technologies evolve, you have a really big market intelligence side of the equation. And this is getting back to what, you know, Melissa's talking about and we've been talking about before, is that you can look at that data more so than just beyond a regulatory perspective and look at how can we improve the business, both on the regulatory side, but both on, you say, an alpha generation side. So that is actually also a very big factor, is that, you know, it's not just a cop tool to catch, you know, the bad traders, investors, or whoever you want to call it. It's really a performance enhancing tool.
And again, you know, with my execution hat on, we actually realized, we worked out that if you work out all of the trades that come up against a benchmark and failed, and the valuation of the dollar number for all of those, that actually is dwarfed by improving all of your executions by half a basis point. You know, if you can improve the 95% of executions that don't fall outside of a benchmark, correct me, Melissa, if I've got the number wrong here, but, you know, there's a decent number. But if you, instead of worrying so much, you've got to do the compliance box ticking exercise. But most traders know why something is bad. Because they had a portfolio manager screaming at them, say, get me out, or I just need to buy this right the second. And the execution then looks rubbish in the moment. But actually, if you can improve all the other trades by a small factor, the net effect then is far greater than the outliers.
It's monumental, certainly.
And that's interesting, because how are we going to manage that in a 24/5 world?
I mean, you know, I think it's just, quite honestly, it's applying the same rigor that we have during the traditional hours. You know, obviously, there's additional risks that we're seeing in 24/5. We have more thinly traded securities. We have lower volumes there. And so that does open itself up to more risks. So, you know, obviously, near and dear to us, potential market manipulation, for example. So it's making sure that you have coverage in place for those extended hours, but also adapting the frameworks that you have to compensate for the complexities that we're seeing. So do you need to update thresholds? Do you need to update your policies and procedures and, you know, refreshing those as you learn stuff? You know, we don't see 24/5 going away. Somebody joked to me that we should enjoy while it's 24/5 before it becomes 24/7 and we don't get holidays. But all joking aside, I think that that illuminates that, you know, there's a real institutional and retail interest here. So as we learn more, you know, we can improve the frameworks that we have around this.
Actually, I was at a conference last week and the book to talk was 22/6.
22/6. There you go. So we get 2 hours for reconciliation. That's kind.
But David, also too, just, I mean, to add to that is that, and when I first started in equities back in the late 90s, there was no pre-market trading. It was 9:30 to 4. Come 4 o'clock, things ended. And, you know, and that evolution happened. To me, now it's like 24/5 is just going to be just like the regular market. Just like how trading at 6 a.m., trading after hours during earnings at 4:30 is just like the regular market. Yes, it might be a little more illiquid. So you change your parameters, or you just change your, you could say, your internal system slightly different for that illiquidity. the 24/5 will be exactly the same thing. I don't think we are reinventing the wheel here. We're just making it a bigger wheel.
Our whole lives are like, we need to trade in the middle of the night. I need to buy something in the middle of the night. So it feels like a natural evolution.
So are regulators going to be able to keep pace with the structure of modern trading? Or is it really going to be firms like, you know, asset managers and yours that end up taking the lead?
You know, I think historically firms do tend to lead the way. You know, they're the ones who really want to seize the opportunities that are out there, you know, and I think that that's okay. As long as, again, there's the same oversight over emerging, whether it's overnight trading or crypto, I think as folks tend to participate in these markets and are thoughtful around the oversight that they have, they can actually lead the charge and partner with regulators. And I've seen really good examples of that, where regulators are, you know, partnering with practitioners, partnering with leading players in order to learn from them, because it makes sense, right? You're going to learn from the people who are out there doing it. And hopefully that partnership continues.
So moving tech, other asset classes, everyone does equities. You guys, I know, have some fixed income. Crypto?
I mean, crypto is, again, that's just another a new product, new market. As more and more people go into it, you're going to need the surveillance. And from our perspective, which is quite interesting, the surveillance really isn't coming from the regulators' need. It's actually coming from the exchanges that want to really create an integrity of the markets. So, you know, crypto right now is the big question is, what volume is real? So you have a lot of these quant, you know, hedge funds that aren't going to go into these certain markets because they're like, how much of that volume is real or how much is wash trading? So you do have a lot of these data providers in the crypto field and also exchanges that are really trying to end that sort of normal pattern, which has been normal there. And so you're seeing that sort of move, not coming from regulators, but coming from the actual market itself, looking to legitimize the market so larger institutions could come in. So you're seeing that a lot in crypto. And that's just one part. That is just the wash trade. That is just, you know, I guess that is, you could say, trading manipulation 101. And then it's, you know, the different type of market that crypto is, just because it's so decentralized. You have off-chain and on-chain. You have all these different factors that make, you could say, traditional trade surveillance harder. It's not like you're, again, reinventing the wheel, but you're going to have to make a lot of tweaks. And that process is continuing. It's an ongoing, and we're really in the first innings of it, you know, probably not even past the second. And sorry for the European side for the baseball terminology, but maybe we're in the 10th minute or 20 minutes of the football game.
Rob, I like the word that you use there for integrity. I think that that becomes just so crucial to get the participation that folks are hoping for. And I think things like having trade surveillance and market abuse detection in place is that much more critical to maintain that type of integrity. And we'll learn, right? We're learning where we're going to apply the principles that we have from TradFi and, you know, bring them over with us. And then we'll accommodate and adapt to emerging types of behaviors and, you know, what we're seeing in the crypto space. But I think that, you know, the EU's MiCA is doing this really well so far as, you know, they want to put some regulation in place and apply familiar concepts with things like authorization and transparency. And again, it's not necessarily like building an entirely new framework, but leveraging what we already know and then applying some new fundamental principles as well.
I mean, in your time at Morgan Stanley, did you start to see people ask different questions about execution after MiFID II? And are they different to what we're asked in the US? Because, you know, we're as ignorant about the US as...
It's interesting. So I think, yeah, look, MiFID II certainly changed the mind shift in terms of what do we define as best execution and what are some of the, you know, additional data points that we need in terms of not just proving the execution side of things, but also like optimization, because interestingly, regulators are interested in that as well. In terms of the different questions that we get, I think that there are synergies across what the different jurisdictions are using, because beyond the regulatory perspective, which is important and people need to meet their, you know, regulatory obligations, of course, I think, again, going back to what we were saying earlier, showing or identifying opportunities that are going to improve your strategies while keeping your clients safe, I think that that's just what's becoming more and more compelling and more relevant. and really that increased alignment between execution, compliance, and trading strategy is just part of any conversation now in a post-MiFID world.
Yeah, fair point. I mean, the other thing that really, we've talked about it before, but the whole process is not just the compliance box ticking exercise. It's how the desk works. It's how the alpha is generated, retained, improved, how the fund grows. This becomes a commercial process. It's not now a compliance officer, sorry, Melissa, coming into the room and saying, why did you do this? It's now everyone trying to work backwards from what would be the best answer in the world here and how do we get it to benefit the fund and the investor. And actually, I like to actually remind these asset managers the management fee, because actually it's all about making more money and losing less in the execution process.
I kind of love that, though. You know, I feel like it gives everybody, look, there's always the common goal, right? You want your organization to do well, but now it really gives you the roadblocks to have those interfunctional, cross-functional conversations. And I think that that just means that everyone is that much more invested in what the mission of an organization is and that much more educated on it as well. You're not as siloed in, okay, I know this one rule in compliance, and if anybody breaks this rule, that's what I'm going to focus on. Like, you're understanding how the business truly operates, and that partnership, again, between compliance and the business side is just so strengthened and lends itself to opportunity.
I guess we're getting to the point where we look at what next. So I think we've seen that surveillance actually has more than just box ticking. I think we've covered that thoroughly. It's becoming a strategic asset. It's definitely becoming important. So who beyond compliance and then the trading desk needs to use the outputs from a great surveillance system? Who else do we need? Strategy teams, executive management?
I would say certainly on the best execution side, the strategy upper management, because at the end of the day, it improves the entire, you say, system, or improves better executions, faster executions, whatever your metrics are. If it helps you get to that bottom line, I think it's very important for upper management. And so them having an understanding of how that works is great. What's great about incorporating with trade surveillance is that trade surveillance just makes sure the wheels are still greased, that nothing is clunking up the system. And, you know, it's why best action, I think trade surveillance do go hand in hand, because it really just allows the company to run more efficiently. And in that case, you do need upper management involved.
I completely agree with that. I think everybody benefits from this data. So you have, you know, your strategy teams, as Rob mentioned, even analyzing, like, how do changes like MiFID II implicate our trading patterns, all the way to executive leadership, highlighting how you're doing quality-wise compared to competitors, seeing where, you know, operational improvements can be made. You know, your risk management teams can identify patterns that precede market stress events. So really, this information is just valuable across the board.
So anything to sum up with?
I would say, you know, to close, that robust surveillance and best execution capabilities do create a competitive edge in terms of execution quality, risk management, and client service. And so investing in compliance is actually a strategic differentiator rather than a regulatory burden.
And Melissa, I couldn't have said it better.
Firstly, I'd like to thank Melissa and Rob for their time to share both Trillium's strategy and direction with us and their thoughts on the wider TCA best execution piece. I'm definitely going to use both terms in every time I go to the US from now on. I also need to thank the Realization Group, who run this podcast in the background. We hope you found it interesting and insightful. And if you did, please subscribe to the Financial Markets Insight podcast channel for future episodes. And go and look up Melissa Watchus and Rob Cope if you want to talk to them about Trillium Surveyor. Thanks, guys.
We'll be more than happy to.
Great. Thanks for having us, David.
Thank you, David.